Well, it's I got something out of it. Actually, I just got more lucidly than I have than I remember doing it before. That when I'm saying I remember doing something before, the memory of doing something before is something I'm doing right now. And if I tell you about something I got to do in 10 minutes, the idea of something that I got to do in 10 minutes is something I'm creating right now. So I'm never really experiencing the past or the future, other than the fact I'm creating. I'm continually creating constructs of the past and future in my now.
How about this? You're gauging where you are by projecting forward a little bit and projecting back. It's like a balancing, you know, scales.
Yeah.
You're in the middle, and you're sort of always saying, "Oh, I'm going over here, and I came from there, or there's where I am, so that means I can go here." You're always juggling the past, present, and future in your now, and that's all your now is.
Yeah.
You never get to the past or the future.
No. Well, you do. I keep transforming my now into a different experience of past, present, and future in my present now.
Yeah, but you there's no point saying you're getting somewhere. So you're just oscillating.
No, but like, I guess. But I mean, there are things that happen, say, in my outer kingdom that portend change. You know, something's going to change. You know, like, I was told several months ago that my job's going to end. And so I've been experiencing a consecutive series.
You think that's a future now?
Well, I've been experiencing consecutive experiences of now, of that time being closer and closer, although in my present now I still have my job, but the actual deadline is getting pretty close. So I can, you know, in my consecutive moments of now, I'm going to experience that moment arrive.
Yeah, but it may never come as you are projecting that it will be.
It has a pretty finality about it. That's why they draw up contracts and you sign things and the company wants me to be very clear that they're, you know, what exactly what the agreement is. And so things are written up and agreements are made and...
Yeah, Visual Space. It's the printing press. That solidifies this time.
Yeah, but, exactly. Nevertheless,
well, enjoy worrying about it. Embrace the worry.
Yeah. So then you were. So it sounds like he was distinguishing thought as being what actually shows up in your present.
Yeah.
So, like, for instance, there's a green felt tip pen on my desk in my present experience. So it's like he was saying, well, that's my thought. Now, I also happen to know that, I think there's a red felt tip pen somewhere around here, but I don't see it. So it's not in my thought. If it's not in my experience, how can I think it? That's the weird thing.
There is a red felt pen around.
There may be. I would have to look around to determine if it's actually here.
And you're saying you can't experience it.
Well, it's not. I'm not experiencing it right now, so it's not.
Even though you have a thought of it.
Yeah, but he was saying, "But I'm not seeing it."
Yeah, you're not. Well, you see it in your mind's eye. The whole thing, like,
right.
In our dialogue, I kind of confuse it because I don't know what stage he's talking about seeing it physically.
No, but he's saying if you can see it, you have it. He's almost synchronizing seeing it with having. It's almost
right.
Like he's saying there's a red. He's almost like.
Let me respond to that. What you said so far.
All right.
He says later. I don't know it, but you know, weeks later, other times he's talking about seeing it in your mind. And I kept asking him, "Do you mean in your mind or seeing it?" And he wouldn't clarify that. But now later, it's more in your mind is what he means by seeing it. which is like visualizing it.
Well, that's not what I got out of your talk with him.
Yeah, well, it was quite confusing, the talk, or quite intense, or oscillated, unsatisfactory in a way.
Well, you can't sleep with it if you're seeing it in your mind. He says you think it, see it, sleep with it, right?
Yeah, and you don't take the see it as an imagination.
I don't take it as showing up.
Okay, what do you mean by see it? Now I end up asking you what I was asking him. Do you think it, and then do you see it? You see, really visualize what appears in front of you, or you just imagine it after you've thought it?
Yeah, it's not thinking about the red felt tip pen is not as concrete of an experience as the green felt tip pen that's sitting on my desk.
Right, we know that's a seeing it.
I don't tend to strongly visualize things anyway. I'm a little more acoustic, I think. So I have an idea of what I mean with the green, and I can sort of kind of flash on what the green felt tip pen looks like, but I don't see it too closely in my mind. Anyway, I guess if we're talking about visualization, then that's sort of like, sure.
Well, you'll notice when you hear Ion said, he says, you think it, you see it, and then it'll show up. So you've seen it before it shows up. So where have you seen it?
Where does it show up, the green felt tip pen? I think it, I see it. Where does it show up?
I don't know. Shows up in your experience somehow as a reality. Or you think, or you don't demand a concrete reality, just thinking it and going along with living in thought, so to speak, is good enough.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
Like if you don't need to eat, then you only eat when you want to. And half the time you can just think about eating and that's enough.
Yeah.
Think, oh, I want to eat, so okay, I'm eating the hamburger.
Right.
And, okay.
Well, yeah, no, I know the difference between visualizing and having something in my, having something in my
hand.
Well,
did you get that I was trying to find out what he meant by seeing?
Yeah. And what had occurred to me several times is that it's what actually shows up in front of your visual, in your space.
Not the visualization.
Exactly, yeah.
But I hear him now when he says that, it sounds like visualization.
Well, okay. Well, it sounds like that because you're talking to me and I got you thinking that way now, I guess.
No. That's, if you listen closely, I'm saying, do you mean visualization or it actually shows up and then you call that the seeing level?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't think it gets defined there. I just noticed many shows later, whenever he said think it, see it, he meant visualize it. Whereas he's not admitting to that so concretely when I'm arguing with him.
Well, see, that's the thing, like in the mystical tradition, there's something called the astral light. It's one of four phases of the creative process before something becomes manifest. And I asked him about what did I call it, the astral light? I asked him a couple questions that were jumbled up, and I threw in the word astral light. He says, well, we can work with that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know exactly what to ask him. But see, now that would be as though you see it, you bring it into the dimension of astral light, and then you bring it into the etheric, and then it actually shows up or precipitates into your present now. You can pick it up and use it or hand it to somebody or whatever.
Right, well, he simply...
But that's too complicated.
Yeah, you just have to see it.
Yeah.
You think it, rather. Think it.
Yeah.
So remember, relax and allow. Allow means to think.
Yeah.
And that's like, he's actually, people complain, so-called smart people complain, that most people don't think enough.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out thinking is the key to a slack-filled life. So they should think more, but not in about this or that. They shouldn't worry, but they should allow themselves to hear their thoughts.
By looking for what is the closest thing to my bliss and then allowing those thoughts to arise, not really working at it too hard.
Yeah, and allowing yourself to think every thought under the sun, and know that that's that's as good as eating something.
Mm-hmm.
I've always said that I eat thinking, and
yeah.
That's what I do. My food is thought.
Yeah, but I still am a little hung up on the Maslow's thing, because if you run out of food and water, after a while that'll become more important than anything you can think. And then when you get that satisfied, you can go back to thinking.
Well, that's the contrast. You get used to that. Here, let me just put you on hold. I have to talk to Carolyn about something. Just a second. Okay, so you get all painful, you think you're hungry, and then you give in, okay, I'll have a bit of substance. But that's the ongoing process. You're always gauging how much you can live in the relaxed bliss.
Yeah, well, let's make it.
And how much, that's contrast to start thinking
right.
You do it. So you're always juggling that.
Yeah.
And you can get better at it, so you don't succumb. Because probably you're just thinking, oh shit, I need this, and have all these reasons why. But
well, here I can make it even more immediate than that. You know, I mean, hold your breath for 2 minutes, and I'll bet you long before you get to the 2 minute mark, it's going to be the most important thing going on for you is that you stop doing that.
Yeah.
And you get back to and you start breathing again, getting back to thinking.
So that'd be your contrast. See the.
Yeah.
Like you could you keep going. I mean, you know, these surfers. 40-footers, they learn to breathe, hold breath for 4 minutes.
4 minutes? I don't think so.
Oh, that's what some of the surfers say. I've heard it said in different documentaries. Or
no kidding. Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah,
Four minutes.
This other guy told me, though, that they have little devices that they can suck on.
Oh, well, that could help you out. That could get you to the 4 minute mark. I don't think anybody could hold their breath for 4 minutes while they're being tumbled around.
I know. But, Ion went into a whole description of how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
I asked about this, and there's a whole, I can't remember it, but there's a whole way the surfers deal with. You do not want, you have to, I guess as you're falling, you got to spike backwards so that the wave doesn't fall on you and knock your breath out.
Oh, yeah.
It's totally incredible that those guys can do that.
Oh, it's insane.
Yeah. I was thinking lately they're parallel worlders or something.
Yeah, I heard you bring that up with Ion as a question. Well, so, you know, I was really in surf mode. I was watching one surf flick after another, and I'd slow some of the sequences down to really get a good idea, really, really, really see what these guys were doing. And it just literally looked like it just didn't seem reasonably possible to me what they were doing.
What are you looking for?
Well, I'm comparing them with what it used to feel like when I surfed, and I was comparing with my abilities. You know, and these guys just, I don't know, man. I don't know. They're
so balanced.
And they know where they know, they always know, you know. Ion says, if you don't know where you are now, how are we going to talk to you about parallel worlds or whatever. They just know where they know exactly where they are from moment to moment on that surfboard.
Well, if you grow up with it, I guess it's second nature.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I think it's in the Vatican City one. We're talking about we're going to complete this and that and complete all the philosophies, all the religions and all the sports, and then I says, and NASCAR, and I go, nah, I ain't completing no NASCAR.
Mm-hmm.
And we joke about that, and I said, I want to complete surfing. I want to do the 40-foot waves.
Mm-hmm.
So if I live forever, I can imagine someday being able to do it, but I can't imagine how I'd do it. How do you practice? How do you rehearse?
Yeah.
How many years do you got to work yourself up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I surfed big waves on the North Shore of Hawaii in the winter of 78, I think it was.
Yeah, you told me about it. The board went way down a mile away.
Yeah.
But, okay, so this thing, so did you find it, what did you think of the style of it? Because it's probably uncomfortable, that one, for people. Because I'm there nitpicking, and he's nitpicking back. I just wonder if you get a frustration.
I enjoyed it's like watching a good tennis match or something. You get absorbed in the action of the ball, of the back and forth of the ball. And it gives you a break from whatever else you were doing. So,
and you started to get into it, it sort of speeded up your sense of past, present, future.
Didn't speed it up.
I was intrigued.
At some point, I was convinced that he was saying that thought is what actually shows up in your physical, in your physical reality, not in your visualization or your imagination.
No, I'm just going by what he says. You think it, you see it, and then it shows up. So what is this middle phase, seeing it?
Well, I don't know, because he made seeing coincidental with the actual, your eyes engaging the thing, and then it's there and you can pick it up.
Well, you wouldn't say you think, you should just say think it and there it is.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. You know, and I think if we really, really begin to eliminate the conditioned thought of time, that reality might actually work that way. Lazarus used to say, the reason why we gave ourselves time was to slow down the time it takes to have a thought and the time it takes for that thought to manifest. Sometimes he'd use the idea of a race car driver going 230 miles an hour. He said that, you know, if you're a novice and you just jump in a race car and you punch the thing up to 230 miles an hour and you start hitting turns, you don't have the coordination or the responses or the reflexes to be able to handle that. You're going to crash and burn. But if you, but a race car driver can shorten the time that it takes to think and the time it takes to actually maneuver that car, to where there's becomes, and I think that's why race car drivers get high, because they create a synchronicity, a coincidence between thought and action, to where they're sort of happening uniformly. The thought shows up at the moment the thought is thunk, and that reality actually starts working that way. As and like he was saying, you know, like, the reason you gave yourself time is because some guy's driving down the road and cuts you off, and you have this thought, you know, like, that you'd like to see his car go up in flames, and all of a sudden the guy's car goes up in flames, and you realize you just created a bunch of more problems for yourself, because you just created this guy's car going up in flames in front of you because you thought that you had the thought and it happened. So you give yourself time between the thought, between having a thought and the time and the manifestation of the thought, because then you can start sort of correcting as you're going along. You can sort of keep putting in the corrections so that you get where you want to go without getting there faster than you really wanted to or knew how to handle or something like that.
So this was all based on what Lazarus said.
Yeah, what I just said the last couple minutes.
Yeah, so we slow down, we create time to slow down things to stop our instant manifestation.
Exactly. Yeah, so that you can actually have time to put in the corrections and have things turn out the way you'd like them, as opposed to
And then when you get
really good, you can start having things. It sounds like JW's getting pretty close to that level. You know, he thinks a thought and then it fucking shows up. You know, it drags it in from a parallel reality or whatever. I mean, Ion talks about JW in that fashion, as though that's how JW kind of lives his life. You know, he thinks of the weather and the weather fucking changes or whatever.
Yeah. He caused all that raining and
but how does he coordinate this between all three of them, his selves? It's a freaking bizarre concept when you think about it, Bob. What point is there if there's another one of you if you don't experience it through your other self anyway? it might as well be another person. I mean, you meet yourself.
Give you some thoughts on that so far.
Okay.
There's duality. Originally, Ian was telling me there was two of us. Then later, he said, well, there's actually more than two of you, but we had to get you to recognize the duality of the two. And the two don't meet. They're like two parallel things. So you might not experience the other one. They don't meet.
Somebody tried to suggest that idea to me once, and they said that it was a matter antimatter thing, that there's some kind of reversal, and if the two did meet, there would be like an annihilation or something, or maybe like what JW talks about when he talks about the snow crystals.
Yeah, I don't know. I've explored antimatter and matter a long time. There's all kinds of things. I haven't determined anything from what Ion said because there's always new aspects coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an ongoing exploration, so Ion presents a new phenomenon every day, and that's good. And we just don't stop. So you were saying, I think the relax and allow is the all-purpose principle of reality, because you can't figure it out. You're this or that. Always relax and allow, and that gives you slack. You know,
yeah.
Keep doing that, but it'll show up. It'll create different tensions. You got to figure out how to relax and allow under surprising new conditions.
Yeah, right.
It's always trying to pull the rug out of you, sort of. So when this whole Lazarus thing about slowing down time because you don't want to hurt the other guy, well, Ion says no. It doesn't matter what. There's not. You can't hurt anybody, and if they get hurt, it's nothing to do with you, and they just go to blitz.
Yeah, I know, but there's your experience of whether or not anybody got hurt, which you want to protect. So you slow things down for your own comfort.
Now, that's based on your rule that you think it's a problem if someone dies.
Exactly right, and most of us do.
Right, and that's the big. That's the thing you got to drop.
Yeah, well, you know, let's drop things.
No. That's you're not willing to engage Ion and explore it? That's what he's saying. He says the Chinese, they seem to be the most mature culture. They don't worry about babies dying because a lot more are coming.
Well, I saw this film about World War II, and they showed these, somebody caught on film, a Japanese man and a woman walking up to an edge of a cliff because the offending army was moving in, and they just weren't going to have it in terms of, you know, being captured. And they walked up to the edge of this cliff, and they just jumped off. I mean, it didn't look like they really even thought about it. They just walked up, and they just went, okay, bon voyage, and they just, like, jumped. It was weird. They looked casual about it.
Yeah. Well, they understand that, you know, there's no end.
Yeah.
They didn't get nailed by the printing press so much.
Yeah. Well, you know, the before the middle, I can see how the dark ages really came in heavy with the printing press. But in the medieval period, which Marshall liked, was more of a balance between the eye and the ear. Nevertheless, like for instance, they had some pretty tormented ideas of heaven and hell, and which they were imagining and creating.
That's what the book tells us. See, the book.
Well, no, yeah, I was looking at medieval imagery of the negative reflection of the tree of life and what they used to imagine about it. And you know, these images, there are people that the images are gruesome. There are people who find them ecstatic because they can relax and allow. Maybe, you know, I was in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, there's six worlds. There's a human world, and there's a hell world, there's an animal world, there's a jealous god world, there's a god world. And mostly, you don't want to get in, like, the hungry ghost world, if you can help it. You're not going to be too happy if that becomes your matrix and you think that's what you're inside of. But the enlightened person can walk between any of the worlds without being touched by any of it. They're all gates. You know, the enlightened person can walk through the gates of all six worlds, including the hell world, and not be touched by it because they're not, you know, whatever. Now, but if you think that you've been subsumed in the hell world and now you're just a little person at the experiencing the effect of that hell world, it's not You don't want to get stuck in there.
No, I wouldn't. I don't want to entertain any of those.
Yeah.
That's useless to entertain these fear things. Here's a thought. I talked to Ion about the inner kingdom is more acoustic. You hear your...
Right.
You hear your heart talk. The outer kingdom is the visual, what you see.
Yeah.
And the middle kingdom is the tactile interval that resolves the two or brings them together.
Right.
So I was thinking, you think it, that's more of an acoustic thing. You hear your thought.
Uh-huh.
Then you see it.
Yeah.
You go to the outer kingdom after
right.
having it heard in the inner kingdom, and then you manifest it. That's what comes to your middle kingdom, your now.
Right.
But actually, that's the tactile interval. It's actually describing the process of cognition.
Right. That's a useful. That's a useful thought.
Yeah, juggling. And then you think of your thought as the voice from the past. The outer kingdom is where you might be going, the future, and the present, as he says, is the middle kingdom. So what you hear, that's the past, and what you see is the future. You're oriented. It's a sensory dynamic there.
Yeah.
The past, present, future are the eye, ear, and tactility.
Yeah. But still there comes a threshold between, oh, that's an interesting, I can think about that in those terms now, but is it an intellectual, is it a conceptual model for me? Or am I really surfing? You know, have I figured out in my mind how surfing works, or am I actually on the surfboard surfing?
Okay, good thing it's a waxing waning. So I go, when I'm into thinking, I'll think and get into it, and then it'll go away, and I don't worry that I'm not thinking. And then later, a spurt of thinking happens, and you enjoy it, and then it goes away. It's the waxing and waning of it.
Mm-hmm.
And not caring which way it goes. Like, it
you
doesn't
know.
Matter if I'm thinking, if I'm getting into a conundrum and think about it, like that session with Ion, there's another part of Bob's day he's not even thinking about, it's not even an issue. But I make
right.
an issue out of it while I'm engaging with Ion. It's a passing
yeah.
event.
Are you doing that for your own entertainment, or because you feel that it would be fun to bring this out for other people to think about?
What? Am I doing what for my entertainment?
Engaging and creating a problem where you know there probably isn't one.
Yeah, I'm showing, but no, see, they're waxing away. When you're into thinking and thinking there is a problem, you think about it, and it's enjoyable. It's like you get into the game
yeah.
mode, so you make
yeah.
a game with Ion or with
yeah.
yourself. Then when it's over, I'm lazy
yeah.
or I'm not thinking, and I can be dumb, and I don't care. I know I'll start thinking again.
Yeah.
It's thinking about whether, oh, gee, am I too much mm-hmm. thinking? Am I thinking too much,
yeah.
or should I think less? Just flow with it, as Ion says, and that's a waxing and waning.
Yeah.
Enjoy when you get involved in an urge, and then when it goes away, don't be worried that it went away, and don't think that it's never going to come back.
Yeah. Is that something that you think would be really, you know, a good way to approach this, or is it something
yeah.
you've actually mastered?
Yeah, like... In a sense, you know, it's like Zappa said, take seriously what you don't take serious. That's waxing and waning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I seriously engage in it, and then I stop.
Mm-hmm.
Or then it just slows mm-hmm. out and it's finished, and that was a good run. And then I enjoy not thinking. And
mm-hmm.
I don't get guilty about not thinking when I'm not
mm-hmm.
thinking.
Well, listening to you you guys get tangled up in what is thinking.
Yeah.
I had, there were parts... where it appeared to me, you're never not thinking because whatever's showing up in your physical reality is a manifestation of what you're thinking right now. It's a manifestation of the process of your thinking, regardless of what because whatever is apparent to you in your environment right now is a function of your thought processes.
Yeah, you think. Thinking is allowing something to be, and that's why Ion says. You get the past, present, future when he says, you couldn't experience something unless you already knew it. That means your thinking created it, but you thought it because you already knew it. That's
yeah.
the beginning point.
Yeah, or you've been, or yeah, and, you know, and but a lot of what we think we've adopted, it's become conditioned within us. We've adopted it by default. And we think unpleasant things and create unpleasant states for ourselves.
Yeah, and you don't worry that you're thinking unpleasant things.
Well, that's the hard part.
See, that's, yeah, you don't worry about your negative. Mm. It's all about not worrying about what you're thinking.
Yeah.
But But in that session, do we talk about thought as electricity or thought being goes to the guff? Do we talk about that?
You don't talk about it going to the guff. You approach asking him if it's electricity, but he never really gets into it with you on that level.
Yeah, I guess I do it in another session, but thought is the strangest thing.
Yeah, how do you get something from nothing? I mean, he makes the guff sound like there's nothing there, and then so how does thought arise out of that anyway, to begin with?
Well, there's no beginning. I think that helps to understand that. There's no beginning.
No, there's no beginning. Yeah.
And so there's no original thought, and you're just frequency tuning into different thoughts, which then become different eras.
Then you can't really think something that hasn't been thunk by someone else before.
Yeah, so that means everything's been thought.
But you can have your own configuration of thought. You can configure a bunch of thoughts within yourself, maybe in a way that it's not that configuration. All those thoughts have been thunk before, but not in that configuration.
Yeah, information when brushed against other information, the results are startling and surprising, or startling and effective. So you're always alchemy, combining things.
Mm-hmm.
That's what McLuhan defined consciousness, the cliche archetype process. So that's combination.
Mm-hmm.
So you're putting one thought against another thought, mm-hmm. and another thought against the previous thought.
Yeah, because you guys keep exploding with excitement when, Ion pronounces, and that's never been said before. That's alchemy, because you're combined, but those thoughts have been thunk, but not in that combination.
And you're allowing yourself, it's the idea you tune in, you're a magnet, and all of a sudden you magnetize a certain cash flow on a Wednesday, and a certain bunch of thoughts are thought. You've allowed yourself to allow those thoughts to come into you. You've allowed yourself to see them.
Yeah. Well, I have to use the word time, because I don't know what else to say. I don't have. In the past, if I could listen to a cash flow before you guys, there was so much output. If I could listen to a cash flow three times, by the third time, I felt like, oh, now I'm relaxing and I'm hearing everything, because I missed stuff the first two times and it wasn't really clear because it was new information. And now I think I've got it locking it all down. Now I barely have time to get through the whole damn thing once before I'm trying to move on to catch up with the tailgate and everything else.
I the same thing. It's like I've given up trying to keep up. I keep up, but there's a lot of stuff I might want to go here again, but I just take the, it doesn't matter anyways. It's just thought.
Yeah, and it'll actually recycle and come up again in the future in some other context.
Yeah. I am enjoying. I've had to stop lately because there's no time. But I enjoy re-listening. I've done about 48 sessions. The original first 48. They're pretty interesting to listen to.
Yeah, I've gone back and re-listened to them.
Yeah, you hear a lot more than. There's sections there. I have no clue what Ion's talking about, though I think I've got a clue, and I might want a little more refinement, but.
Yeah, because
hearing them.
Yeah, because he gave you information in your future now, which when you went back and listened to it, it was more loud.
It was the right time to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's see. Have you been going on the forum?
Yeah, some, not too much.
Did you see what I posted? The neat thing that happened last night.
No.
Okay, so you're on your computer now.
Yeah. Oh, I got to tell you this, because I guess I was kind of tickled. This will just take a second. I saw that. Did you ever get to see that movie called The Ninth Gate?
No, we've got it listed, but I haven't.
Oh.
I just saw. Did you ever see Inglourious Basterds?
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was a good movie. So I watched it, and then I had to wait to look at some of it again, and that was a week or so before I had time, and so Ninth Gate should be coming soon. We're just sending back Inglourious Basterds now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. It sounds very complex from what you and Ion are talking about. All kinds of crazy scenes in it.
Yeah, there's this kind of little subtlety.
Isn't that amazing how you get to talk to Ion about that?
Yeah.
You look at what he says on the thread, he's telling, he knows the story. He knows the movie.
Right. Well, here's the thing I want to tell you, how subtly he knows the movie. Because I was trying to get him to, on there were subtle points of the movie that I wanted to direct his attention to, and he didn't really want to, at first I thought, well, he doesn't get it, or he didn't see that scene, or he doesn't remember that in the movie or something. Then I started thinking, no, it's just my angle of approach on this. He's not interested in engaging about that particular subtlety or symbolic meaning or whatever was presented. He'll redirect my attention back to something else that happened in the movie. But I had said something about... Oh, I'd made this... I was trying to do something which he's accused, which I've been accused of, which is I'm working on it, which is forming a conclusion and then sort of asking a question about something I've already formed a conclusion about, and sort of trying to get Ion to
support your
to verify my conclusion or something. Anyway, I posted something of that nature on the. And he says, not so much. And then he says, we'll play, but clean up on aisle 5 is due. So I say, how come it's always aisle 5 that gets so messy? And Tina says, I'm sure it has something to do with Bob's chart.
Yeah.
And Ion says, no, it's the degrees of separation, who, what, when, where, why, and how. Order travails, but rarely all six at the same time. So this separation biz can be identified and softened as cleanup on aisle 5, because he's got 6 degrees of separation, but he says they don't all have an. He says they're ordered. Okay, so then I say, there was something about he got all excited when he talked. There's this woman in the movie. Her name is Frida Kessler. And she has is in possession of one of these three copies of this ancient book that is significant in the movie. And she has this secretary who is like a bulldog. She's real butch, and she like means business. You don't want to get tangled up with her. And there's something about her secretary and Frida which is resonates to number 5 in the Kabbalah. The movie's. A lot of the symbolism comes out of the Tarot and the Kabbalah. So I says, I'll hand that job, aisle 5, degrees of separation, off to Baroness Frida's secretary to clean up. And then he says, yeah, like the oranges and the peeling down the steps they roll. Well, there's this scene where the main character of the film, Corso, is leaving the Baroness's... she has an office on like the 3rd floor of this building, and second floor. He's leaving her office, and on the way down this, and he's kind of panicking. He's running down the stairs, and he bumps into Frida's secretary. And Frida's secretary drops a bag of oranges, and the oranges go tumbling down the stairs. Now, unless you'd watched the movie 2 or 3 times, you probably wouldn't even remember the oranges going down the stairs. But I have watched it several times. So I come back, and I say, yeah, well, when the oranges are done peeling down the stairs, they pretty much come to rest in the same place. That helps. Oh, no, okay. So he says, yeah. So in reference to Corso bumping into the Baroness's secretary, he says, like oranges peeling down the steps they roll, as long as someone is mopping up. And I don't know what he means by somebody mopping up, but I'm just thinking that's a metaphor for something. So I say, yeah, when the oranges are done peeling down the steps, they pretty much come to rest in the same place. In other words, once they've all tumbled down these 2 flights of stairs, they all rest at the very bottom. So then I say, and that would help with the mopping up. And then he says, and the mop water should help to extinguish the fire. Well, there's this fire, and so now I don't know what he's talking about, the mop water and the fire. I just think it's all a metaphor for something. Anyway, I go back and watch the film again. Like I said, I've already seen it several times, so I remember the oranges tumbling down these two flights of stairs, and Corso running down these two flights of stairs. And it turns out that when Corso hits the bottom stair, there's a little area there, and it's about six by 6 feet, and then there's the front door, which he comes bursting out through the front door. So he runs down the first flight of stairs, he bumps into the Baroness, she drops her oranges, then you see him run down the first flight of, from the second, he starts on the second flight of stairs, then you see him running down the first flight of stairs, and some of the oranges are still coming down the first, following him down the first flight of stairs. Then he hits the bottom step, heads through this little linoleum floor area, which is like 6 by 6, and bursts out the front door. And I notice, after what, because I go back to watch the scene with the oranges, because I want to count how many oranges there were, because there was some significance to that. As soon as his foot hits the bottom stair, and he hits that little area just before bursting out through the front door, there's a woman standing there mopping the floor, and the scene literally is less than 2 seconds.
You mean what scene's less than 2 seconds?
The moment from which he hits the bottom stair, crosses the little 6 foot area, and bursts out through the front door onto the street.
So you see the woman mopping during that whole period?
Imagine he's running down the second flight of stairs, he's running down the first flight of stairs, he hits the bottom stairs, bursts out through the front door. From the time it takes his foot to hit the bottom stair to the time it takes him to burst out through the front door.
About 1 second.
It takes about 1 second. There's a fucking woman there mopping the floor. and it's like, I'd watch this movie like a half a dozen times or more and never noticed that. And it was like, and I never would have, except that he stuck, you know, when he stuck that in there, like...
Yeah, you heard it. You heard it, and then you saw it.
I heard it, and then I saw it. Yeah, but it's like... He knows every fucking frame of that movie.
Yeah, and more. He knows what they left out and who wrote what.
I mean, I wonder if he knew that I would eventually notice that there was a woman mopping the floor there after we had this little, you know.
Yeah, and non-physical knows everything. So whatever thought you could think, it knows it.
Yeah. But,
That's pretty good. But that's what we're up against. Have you ever... We haven't had access to this, really, before.
No. You know, I don't know what's going on in other people's realities that are out there parallel world traveling, but not in my world.
We got a very good, interesting alien monster.
Yeah.
I mean, his performance were you just reading it? Were you on the computer?
Oh, yeah, you were going to ask me to look something up in the forum.
Yeah. So you were reading a part of the post there. I think I heard you reading it, right?
Yeah.
So you would go to the main list.
Right.
And you go down maybe 10 threads. It says Ion blows up. Ion invades JW's broken computer. Now click on that. Let me hear it. You listen to it. It's about 4 minutes.
Oh, I think I did listen to this. It starts off with some music.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't listen to it all the way through.
No, you got to hear what's... You can move it forward.
I hear the music, and then I hear you doing this commentary, and I'm thinking, oh, Bob's making a big deal out of nothing, and I didn't listen to the whole thing.
Oh, no. You got to listen to this. It's the most amazing thing going. So you put the music up, so let me hear it, and then you can
move. Okay, I'm
going
to skip to the end of the music.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it does nothing, and then every so once in a while, boom, and then every so once in a while.
So there's a dead computer, and there's no speakers in that room.
Well, they're in there, but I unplugged them all.
Does it sound like it's coming through the speakers? It sounds very clear.
No, it's like that would be the equivalent of laptop speakers, and it never sounded like that before. Of course, it shakes the windows of the house sometimes.
Yeah.
All hours of the day and night.
And let me just check what the latest post is. The latest post is Taze. So, let's see. Maybe Taze posted something. So, we look just wondering. 6:31, okay. Tase, no, there's nothing there. Oh, no, we go over to part two. Nope, nothing, so nothing there. So I go back to, you have 6:34, Tase. At 6:31 for JW, let's see. That'd be funny if it was in your thread. Oh, there's a YouTube there. Let's click on it. 6:31. Yep. Messiah. Holy cow. He was posting it while we were talking. He's saying that about you. It's the 4JW thread that I created yesterday. So that's it, right? There it is. Matt Messiah, hallelujah, Robert Shaw.
That sounds clear, too.
No, it's very, very short, small speaker. But, okay, so it's right now 6:37. We've been talking for 10 minutes. So while we were, I was playing you the 4JW thread.
The last Zappa thing.
It happened during the Zappa thing. Yeah, so I played the 4JW thread, the YouTube snippets of that, then the 4 Connie, 3 Shania Twain for Connie, and then I was playing the Zappa for the Dukes of Bob, and Ion posted on the 4JW thread at 6:31 in the middle of our playing Zappa, this thing, to comment on something. We won't say what he's trying to say, but there's proof right there, Carol, that these YouTubes come out of your room, out of your dead computer, while as soon as they're posted on the Dupes of Non-Physical Ionic Form, the Ion Form. So, very good. Okay, so I'm going to end this. This is on May 15th, 6:38 p.m. Hawaii time. Copyright New Grandview Incorporated, all rights reserved.
You gotta throw the copyright on.
Copyright the last second.
So what the hell happened? I still don't get what happened.
Okay, JW's computer is broadcasting YouTubes, and it's all the time, day in and day out, and the computer has no internet connection. It's all plugged off. The battery's taken out of it, I think. Nothing there. The speakers are disconnected. And with all that nullity and void, you heard the fucking computer booming the Handel's Messiah.
Oh, that was his computer over your telephone line?
Yeah, it's in his bag. It's in the other room. We're just talking, and I was playing him Zappa YouTubes.
Yeah.
And, okay, just a minute, I got to talk to Carolyn again, just a second. Yeah, I had to talk to Carol. I'm just going to bed. So, what were we just saying? Take this just a second. I'll explain this thing. if you listen closely, you hear JW saying at the end of the music, see, it'll just go dead, and it's not plugged in. It's a dead computer.
Hmm.
But this fucking incredible volume is broadcasting through a dead computer, through the little microphone or speaker in the computer.
Hmm.
He hasn't got his big speakers hooked up to it.
Wow.
So here's that situation. So a few days ago, everything's going along okay. You know, YouTube's blowing up every now and then, but he's functioning a little bit with his computer. So we wanted to see the torched backyard that happened a couple of weeks ago, so we set up a Skype time.
Mm-hmm.
And then he calls us to say at that time that this computer is jammed. It won't move. It's just fucked. So he can't do the Skype. So he calls up a company, and I guess by remote, because he's got a very elaborate computer, most up-to-date thing, and they can examine it from remote. Is that possible?
Yeah, if it's turned on.
Yeah, so it's on but frozen. So they examine it, and they determine that considering that the average computer does about 20 megahertz of byte exchange going in and out or something, does that mean anything to you?
Yeah.
The byte activity?
Hmm.
Most people are at 20 megahertz. The biggest is a computer in Missouri at 60 megahertz.
Hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at JW's computer, and they determine that it's operating at 105 megahertz.
Jeez.
And they're going, what the fuck's going on here? That's impossible.
Hmm.
And they say, there's nothing wrong with your computer. Everything is okay. It's actually operating on a super level. And we don't know why that is, and he ain't telling them. So I don't know the follow-up to that, but that was like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
They determine it's operating. It's like it's got the non-physical going through it, and we register it as, you know, on a nano Chinese building steel from the World Trade Center kind of quantum computing. This is what's going on with his fucking computer as Ion permeates through it and engages us on the forum.
Wow.
So I don't know the follow-up. Like, you know, you think they'd be curious and come over and look at it. Maybe they did. I don't know. I haven't talked to them in the last 12 hours or more. So, and we didn't talk about it. So I haven't talked to them about this since yesterday. But isn't that incredible?
That's pretty strange.
It's all, like, basically his house is haunted in the old cliche. Okay, you got a ghost running nuts in his home, right?
Mm-hmm.
People would call it a ghost, even though it's not a ghost. It's a super non-physical. They can tell you what are ghosts and what aren't.
I remember on the last tailgate I asked if it was possible to visualize the non-physical, and he said, yeah, it's the resonance space between, you know, the neutron, the proton neutrons and the electrons. It's the space between, the resonance space between.
Yeah, well, that's the theme that came up in Fringe this week. You see the recent Fringe, it's pretty amazing.
Hmm.
And it's parallel worlding and showing it.
Hmm.
Ion was even very impressed.
Wow.
And then Ion was even saying the other night, Bob, wait till you see the other Walter and what he looks like in 1985. It's uncanny. He looks exactly like you. Exactly. More than the other fucking Walter.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And even Ion's impressed.
Wow.
And so I guess, Ion has seen part two, because we're ending up the last 2 weeks with one big thing, and so we just watched part one last week, and then part two come up on Tuesday, and I guess there will be a scene of seeing the other Walter back in 85, like we saw the first Walter back in 85.
Mm-hmm.
So Ion already has seen it, and it's describing what I look like,
cool.
Or what Walter looks like.
Wow. Hmm.
So, okay, so we got, so what did you think of the talk tonight? Did you hear it?
I heard most of it.
Yeah, what'd you think?
Well, I got to listen to it when I'm sort of got my headphones.
No opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it seemed like it was not as hyperdimensional as the last week.
Right.
Last week's went hyperdimensional, I guess, when you went into the whole cliche archetype dynamic.
Yeah.
This one was a little more closer down to earth, and I like that.
So what do you think of the tailgates?
They're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It seems like a key, if you want to get along, go along to get along or whatever, a key to this whole thing is to not look for validation or question what Ion is saying. I mean, Tina pretty much just sort of takes on faith what he says, it sounds like. And like Chad, you know, when you said to Chad, his castle, that castle experience he's having with Angela, I mean, they must be having a blast. But, you know, you said, Chad, did you know you're showing up in JW's room naked, you know, four times a week or whatever? He goes, nah, I had no idea I was doing that. But he's not like most of the rest of us, especially people who haven't heard I Am before, saying, why would you even entertain, Chad, why would you entertain that that's even true if you have no experience of it?
Why don't you question it?
His question was, he goes, well, is there a way I should be navigating difference so I don't end up showing up in your room like that?
Yeah, no, he should be going, wait a minute, JW says I'm showing up in his room? Yeah, what do you mean by that, JW? Oh, he's not here. Oh, Ion, what does JW mean by that, Ion? Yeah, you should investigate a little bit. I try to do the questioning. They don't do it.
Well, the thing, yeah, and Ion's not really interested in arguing with people about this stuff, you know.
No, he will, but he's going to change halfway through, you know. He'll do it for a while. Well,
yeah.
He argued the thought thing with me.
Well,
so,
yeah.
You know, you never know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
He'll argue it. Sometimes he'll start an argument. Other times he's not going to argue because he wants to make another point.
Mm-hmm.
Waxing and waning. So
yeah.
I wouldn't make a determination about what's going on. Just go on.
Yeah, it just seems like the more you're going to get out of it is the more that you stop trying to
Figure it out
and soak in it and go with it.
That's my answer. When you get in the mood of figuring out, go for it, you know, play ball and enjoy the process of the illusion of trying to work it out. And if you don't, that's not a problem.
Right.
It's like a spasm. You have a spasm and then you have a non-spasm phase.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the thing I got to work on because I end up feeling...
You have all kinds of feelings.
Well, I end up getting tense with myself and with Ion because I am, I think...
You're trying to prove something.
I think I have some conclusions. What I'm really, honestly trying to do is to get to my conclusions so that I could really examine them with Ion, but he doesn't want to get to my he apparently knows where he's going or doesn't care because he doesn't really want to get to my conclusions in the first place, and he keeps derailing me, and then I find that to be frustrating.
So you get into talking to him and asking and talking without trying to get to a conclusion, then every now and then you might be able to slip one in.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
wax and wane.
Yeah.
Try to get a conclusion. At the same time, you're not upset that you're not getting one.
Right.
Actually, as I talk about this, I'm an expert at doing this.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's why you get to have...
That's why Ion showed up to Bob. You're only qualified to interact with him.
Yeah.
But it's like people will say, well, Bob's arrogant or Bob's fucking squeezing lemon. That's not true. I'm doing it all, including squeezing lemon, but then... You know, then people, I don't talk for so much the next week. People say, Bob's backing up. They're always trying to calibrate where I am. And I'm not concerned about where I am. I'm just going with whatever I want to do.
I stopped in my mind being critical of your so-called ego in that way because I've seen that it's a dynamic that you're using for a constructive purpose. It's not just you... being a megalomaniac how it appears on the surface sometimes.
Yeah, I know, and that's only during a phase when a certain intensity that just comes out, but
yeah.
It's not something I take any responsibility for. I mean, I know I'm not a megalomaniac. I'm a very nice, passive guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been around me enough to know that.
Yeah. You're working it, Bob.
Yep. I'm on duty. And not slacking off and on duty whenever I feel like it.
Right. So has there been any updates from Chad and Angela and their castle experience?
No, just Chad broke up with Hetty and he's now with her.
Oh, yeah. And how's Hetty feel about that?
I don't know, but she didn't come last week.
Oh, she didn't show up, yeah.
No, not that
yeah.
I don't think she did.
It kind of became apparent the week before that something like that was beginning to happen, because
yeah.
I started softening Hetty up for the possibility that Chad might be wanting to have sex with more than one woman, and would that be okay with her? And she was kind of like conceding, yeah, I could see how that would be okay, but, you know.
That was actually said?
Yeah, not as quite bluntly, a little more subtly than what I said just now.
Ion says that information farm is becoming huge. Well, everybody's going there. Last couple of weeks, people are into the Ion.
Oh, those Boart talks are fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Isn't that incredible?
That's one of the best things you guys have done.
Yeah.
You the fact that you and James knew him so well, you each had a different perspective on Boart. Your perspective was a little more evolved than James's. Because James was a little too close to the mix.
And then, mine's a little more what? Evolved, did you say?
Yeah, I think you had a broader perspective on Boart's dynamics. And then, and then Ion comes in, and he really cleans everything up.
No, it's tremendous what we did there.
Yeah.
And Walter, very interesting. I mean, that for James, he told me after the epitome, the peak experience was when Walter could describe the thing he saw in the mushrooms when they were out in Yucca Valley or someplace.
The lights separating and stuff?
Yeah, like James was just absolutely amazed that someone could articulate. He says, I couldn't describe what was going on, but once, I think it was Walter, when he described it, he was amazed that it could be described, and it was an accurate description, even though he wouldn't have been able to do it himself.
Mm.
Now, that's pretty amazing.
Mm.
See, we're producing a miraculous thing, and people are starting to hear this, and they're amazed, and Ion said the other day there's been about 1 million people there over the last little while.
Cool.
And I said that.
Wonder why more people don't, you know, actually show up, present themselves.
Isn't well, they are. There's, you know, there's five or six lurking there.
Yeah.
So listen to this. So I told this to Ed, and he said, "Well, that's true. A Project Camelot gets 2 or 3 million people, and probably people are realizing this is better, so they're all going to flood over here."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's got a set of kahunas on him. He was asking some, prying into some questions about that Fort
Hood, right.
Fort Hood thing.
I had a talk with him today, I guess, or just today, where I went into more detail what I could remember that Ion said. But here's what we're going to do. Starting tomorrow, he's going to take all these people that are on Project Camelot, and we're going to play little excerpts of their basic thinking and have Ion comment on it. So Ed says, the first time that all this fringe stuff, where there's no critic of the fringe stuff, we're going to have a critical assessment of what they're doing.
All right.
Yeah, it's going to be unique.
Yeah, it's a great dynamic. I think that...
What's a great dynamic?
Well, doing it that way. Well, Ed and you and Ion and James, if he's part of it, it's a good dynamic.
James will be part of it.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, James is.
So what were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say that I don't know if you want to call it a psychological profile of Walter Boart, but in a sense it was.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably the best I've ever heard of a psychological profile ever done on anybody.
That's right. Well, see, we're producing absolutely stunning, never-heard-before-humanity performances. Mm-hmm. Just listen to Tailgate. I mean, there's things. See, what Ed did, he strung together 40 minutes of fragments from different Tailgates and whatever about Parallel Worldly. Did you listen to that?
No. Where do you get to go see that?
Informationfarm.blogspot.com.
Was it right on the front page?
Yeah. It may be down a bit now, but it was the top thing the last couple of days. It says Ion Rifts, Gates, and Portals. It's incredible. So you listen. Anybody listens, and what the fuck are these people talking about? And they all seem to know about it. You know, we're outdoing all the fringe with the strangest stuff.
It's Info Farm or Information Farm?
Information Farm.
Informationn. All one word, F-A-R-M.
Dot blogspot.
Dot com. Oh, put a comma in there, not a dot. Shit. Okay. Sent an email to Carolyn the other day, one of her recent Health Now downloads.
Yeah.
Came there was some malware that tried to download with it.
No, her site is infected.
Hmm.
Through WordPress. It's a thing going around, so it's all fucked up over there, so she's trying to get it fixed.
Does she have any idea of how serious it is, or...
I don't know, yeah, it has to start over again or something.
Mm. Yeah, because Karen's, she says it's okay to share with people that live in the same house, so I shared it with Karen, and her computer picked up and filtered out that there was a virus, and I don't run virus software on my Macintosh, so it kind of concerned me a little bit, but it's probably okay.
You mean you didn't know you had it?
And I went back and checked my logs and realized that actually it had run this little script from that site on my Macintosh, but a lot of these scripts are not targeted to the Macintosh, so it might be okay.
So are you there?
Yeah, I'm just, okay, so my computer's refreshing. Okay. There's Jane Osborne. Oh, yeah. I think Ion posted that.
No, he didn't post it. What do you mean posted?
Somebody posted. Yeah, Ion posted a URL to this Jane.
Oh, that's right. You're right. He did do that over in our thing, yeah.
Yeah. And he's been, what do you call it when you're, he's been absent for the last almost 24 hours from the website.
Yeah, he's backing off. It's part of our strategy.
Hmm. See, I have an older computer, and this website is so information-intensive that it's taken a while for everything to download. Let's see. Ion accesses other worlds via portals, gates, rifts, and thought. That would be it?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
But I'm saying that just listen to that, and that's what people are hearing. They're saying, what the fuck are these guys talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Who are these people?
Yeah. Well, yeah, people are saying that, or you imagine people are saying that?
No.
Because you don't know how people
are
responding.
I imagine that, but yeah. Ion, Ed knows that these people, we're talking about, you know, they're going to be, they're all going to be amazed and fascinated. What is this?
Well, people that can actually open themselves up to the possibility of what he's saying.
Yeah.
I would think the average person would think that
it's
freaking nuts.
How many people
picked up on Bob when you were on David Porter? You know, about five or six of us that actually stuck around.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's not the average person. A lot of average people are strangers and are strange, and they gravitate. You don't know who. I wouldn't...
On average, the number of people who come to the site... how many of them are going to stick around?
Well, they're all sticking around now because this ion's powerful. So the what I was going to say was what's interesting, not just the ideas, but the stories you hear,
mm-hmm.
what we interact about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Ed lives on one of the Hawaiian islands, is that right?
Yeah, Kauai, the more remote.
And was he's like retired, and he just works on this website all the time?
I don't know if he's retired. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
He might be in his early 50s or something.
Uh huh. All right, so I'm going to download that.
Yeah, and do you see over on the left? Look over on the left and go down the left, and you'll see he has a special information or ion button.
People who have engaged with ion have heard talk about parallel worlds.
Oh, shit.
Unfortunately.
Okay. Go down where on the left?
Yeah, just scan down and you'll see it says ion, a special, all of ion. You're up at the top, scan down, you look on the left.
Down below, War in Heaven. This website has so much data downloading on this page. This is not a user-friendly website unless you've got some kind of really fast, powerful machine. This
yeah.
is ridiculous. But anyway, I'm scanning down past the guy with the wings on his head, down past the clip of fringe. Down.
On the left, I don't know if that's what it is. It's just on the left a little bit, I think.
Down a little bit from the top?
Yeah, let me go there. So I get there. You see how it has a green ION at the top? He's always highlighting the ION.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now you look at the picture.
Yeah.
That's a shot from this week's Fringe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, see? It's New York. It's the other New York where the Twin Towers are still up.
Oh, yeah.
Now look at the blimps. Okay, look at the Twin Towers. On the right of the Twin Towers, you see an arm sticking out.
Yeah.
Then look over on the left, you see a blimp.
Right.
Now you see the human carrying it?
Yeah.
And then over to the left of that, there's another human shape.
Right.
Ion showed me this. And those are people from Lady Gaga YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so
I get that.
Ed superimposed this over the other.
Mm-hmm.
But these giants, that would be me, JW, and Carol. And Carol.
Yeah. Well, Ion must be tickled with this image because he likes you guys and he likes Lady Gaga and he likes Fringe.
Yeah. So there's the green Ion. So on the left, under search, look very quickly. Look, search, contact, donate, Ion, view all Ion posts.
Oh, okay.
You see that?
Yeah. Should I click on it?
Yeah, you'll just see all the Ion stuff that he's been doing.
Hmm.
Got the Walter Boward.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Walter was instrumental in... Yeah, they probably named the guy in Fringe after Walter. They picked up on the Walter vibe. The guy that looks like you.
Yeah. So, anything else you want to mention?
No. There's always tons of stuff that could come up in, associations regarding all the ion stuff. I mean, this guy's, he's got three bodies now. JW's got three bodies.
Yeah.
But they're not all on the same
they're
world.
The same
they're
world.
In different
they're
worlds.
All in this world.
Well, how come they live in different houses with different wives?
I don't know where they are.
Huh.
I mean, you know, at that, he's, Ion said at that restaurant in Lawrence, Kansas, October 22nd, there were three of them taking turns sitting at the table.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, huh. maybe they are in other worlds and they just slip in and appear and then they disappear.
Hmm. Yeah, that could be. They're out marching around. No, and they're not working. Well, no, are they working for anybody? They're working for ION, I guess.
No, they just work for themselves. They just live their own lives. You can't work for ION. Everybody has ION.
Well, ION's like the super non-physical, right? Because everybody has their own little tit connected to the non-physical.
It's the first time our collective non-physical is talking to us, but I don't know if it's super.
Yeah. Yeah, because I got the impression, at least early on, that each one of us has a connection to that non-physical, which would be our own, more or less, personal.
Not a connection. We have non-physical.
We have it, but it's tied into the over-soul non-physical, ION.
You'll see. ION's always, you come in with concepts like that's what he gets uptight about. You keep trying to define...
Well, no, that's how he defined it in the beginning. He would say you have your connection to non-physical, but your non-physical is not ION.
ION is all... I don't know what ION is, but when you have readings, you are talking to yourself. And ION, whatever that is, just allows that to happen, or is that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you could say it's the whole thing, but it's still you, because you're the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about oversoul and that, I said, fuck you, it's lower reality. It's your lower soul. If you have a concept of what it is, then you're complicating. It is. It's just your words. It's just your oxygen. It's just your breathing. That's non-physical.
Wow.
It's that simple. Mm-hmm. But we complexify it.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well... Very good. I always enjoy talking with you, but I can't think of anything specific right now to go into.
What movies or music or scenes that are happening? You know, Ion said that Coast to Coast is in trouble.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he said that the audience is waning and George Norrie's arguing over his check, over his raise or something, but I didn't see any news on it.
Well, I can't believe they're in trouble. They're international. They've got a multi-million listenership.
People are changing fast, Scott. We've shown up. We're changing everything.
Yeah, but you haven't sucked the life out of the George Norrie crowd.
Well, it seems I'm saying that's what's happening.
But they haven't. You don't have 14 million listeners at any one moment.
We had 1 million last week, and in about 2 weeks we'll have 2 million, is what Ion's implying. It's happening fast. Once they find out this real stuff, this is fucking real and practical.
Yeah.
There's no authority.
It doesn't make sense, though, because the lines with incoming calls are not that crowded, Bob, and you get the same people every week.
No, it's there, the people who are listening to in the archives. On Information Farm.
Yeah.
It's not. They're not going to our website. They might eventually go there, but I mean, Ed's got a popular website, so they're starting to hear it.
Ed's got to have a cash flow someplace, because his bandwidth, the cost of bandwidth to distribute all this stuff, has got to be going up for him if he's really distributing that many people.
I don't know. He doesn't have any problems.
Ed doesn't seem to know or care, because you were hammering on him trying to say, well, how many listeners listen to this Walter Boart thing? And he says, well, I don't know. Google says blah, blah, blah. But I don't know what that means, because they can say anything they want to. And so,
right. So we go to ION.
Right.
And ION says his site is on fire right now.
Wow.
And it's our stuff. So, and then ION says, and George Bell, George Norrie is in trouble. So... Hmm. You know, we may, you know, that show, I fucking repeat the same shit for 15 years. It's ridiculous. Same people. Now, there's a lot of dummies who are addicted to that, but there's other people, they're not waiting around for that. There's a lot of intelligent people out there who are looking for real stuff, and that's why Ed says there's a lot of intelligent people who listen to go to his site, and they're looking for stuff, but they don't know if it's true, and it's sort of this and that, but they're sick of Project Camel. He knows ION's where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
So he's promoting it, and people will respond.
No, Ed's totally on board with ION. He's one of the people who just doesn't, he's given in. He just doesn't quit. If ION said that, then I accept that as true.
I don't know about that.
That's kind of his attitude.
ION makes interesting things to think about.
Yeah, but
I don't think anybody thinks it's true or worry. Some may. The dummies might say it's true. They're trying to tune into it and become it, but the more intelligent people.
Well, I don't know. I've heard Ed assume Ion's point of view a number of times on faith without any real knowledge.
Well, he does that while talking to Ion. When in Rome, do as the Romans do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That one makes him a good host.
Yeah, and he just knows that there's nothing like this.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Look what's going on. Look at the computer. Look at his incredible output on the forum. This all should be investigated by, you know, Amazing Randy and all the stupid skeptics. Bring in their instruments. Be amazed by it.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of like the Lawnmower Man come alive or something.
Yeah.
Remember that movie Lawnmower Man?
Yeah, I saw that in 92 or 93.
Yeah, you know, he enters the electrical grid and becomes omnipresent throughout the electrical grid.
Well, Ion says all of culture, all of everything, a secret and popular, has predicted Ion. And Ion said the reason you're having... Well, I said the reason I'm having all this discussion in the media is they're all predicting Ion, and we're associated, so the Android meme was predicting Ion, and that's why all that stuff resonated with me, and Ion says exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Nostradamus has Ion in there. Do you know that? Did I tell you about that?
Oh, I think I heard that, but I take everything I hear about Nostradamus with a grain of salt.
Very impressed with Nostradamus.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, he knew what he was doing. He was parallel worlding and seeing all that was coming and writing it down and putting it in quatrains, all under pressure, because he could have been killed if anybody found out what he was doing.
Wow.
So I said, "Is Ion in there?" And he said, "Yep, that's century 3, quatrain 6." And you read it, and it's right there. The wave. Here comes the wave, which is a phrase that Ion's always.
Oh yeah, we're gonna do the wave.
Right, and there's the sentence with the wave right in there.
Huh.
So Ion knew to say that because he knew we'd eventually hear about Nostradamus and look at it, and then he set it up to prove it.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and yep, Carolyn's becoming the smartest doctor scientist on the planet.
That's right. That's an understatement, considering what's happening.
Yeah.
But that's top secret right now.
Yeah.
Yep, Scott, it's unfolding very perfectly. And you have access to the ground floor.
Ground zero.
No, ground floor.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good. I'll look forward to talking to you about the Ninth Gate if you find it worthy of discussion. Enjoyable movie. Very good acting.
Okay. Very good. So I'll talk to you soon, and thanks for recording us. And you got it up already?
Yeah, it's up. Ready to go.
Okay. I'll talk to you later, Scott.
Okay. Bye.
See you Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.